Welcome to the Mo Show podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in across our audio platforms. Just before we kick off, a reminder to download the Kaft app. We have linked it in the show notes across YouTube and the audio platforms. It'll really elevate your experience once you're within Kaft. I've lived a life without it, then with it, and I've realized that it just made my life so much easier in navigating my way through Kaft with the app. So give that a shot when you get a chance. Yesterday, we had some big news coming out. We partnered up with our newest sponsor, Noon. Noon is a leading digital commerce platform in the Middle East. I'll tell you about their two latest services in Saudi Arabia, Noon Minutes and Supermall. Noon Minutes, as the name says, they deliver thousands of products in just 15 minutes, whether it's groceries, household appliances, or even electronics. No one does it faster. And then we have Supermall, the ultimate destination for fast premium shopping, whether it's the latest tech, skincare essentials, or everyday must-haves. Noon has you covered, so stay tuned for more and enjoy the episode.
I'd like to start by always saying Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Honestly, on a race day, Mr. Alejandro, chairman of Formula E, for you to take an hour, if I have an hour of your time, 4 hours, 5 hours before the race is something that I will never forget. So on behalf of the Mo Show podcast team, on behalf of Jeddah, on behalf of Saudi Arabia, on behalf of the MENA region, thank you so much for doing this under what I can only imagine to be a stressful day when it's race day. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, no, Mo, thank you so much for having me. And it's a pleasure to be in the Mo Show. And I've been watching a few, of course, of your episodes. And you know what? It's not so stressing. It's much better now. Before, it was very stressing. In the beginning, when we started Formula E 10 years ago, 11 years ago, every race was like a gincana, like a challenge, like a number of challenges. Now, after 10 years, we got a great team and things work. But of course, I'm always in alert because we had a few new things that just happened in this race. We was the first time ever we did ultra-fast recharging in the cars. So we did pit stops for the first time yesterday. Today we will have a normal race, but yesterday was the first race ever with pit stops. So yeah, so there are always things happening. But yeah, it gets easier with time.
There were never pit stops before in the middle of a race?
Never. Since the beginning, Formula E has been pushing the envelope in terms of technology. When we started, the cars could not do the full race. And I really wanted to start the project as soon as possible because I thought if I don't start it now, someone bigger will start it later, soon, and then I will not have the opportunity. I needed to be the first. So I came up with a crazy idea to give two cars to every driver because the car could do more or less half a race, more or less half an hour. And I needed a race of 1 hour to put them on TV. So I gave every driver two cars and the driver would go, do half the race, go in the pits, jump out of one car and jump into a fully charged car.
Like Le Mans.
Like Le Mans, in the 60s and the 50s. Now the driver changes. They have one car. But then the next generation, it was a huge step forward. We could finish the race with just one car. So we showed how much progress we were making with the technology. Then the Gen 3 is this one. We had a huge step forward in performance. And now we do pit stops and ultra-fast charging to show also the general public how fast these cars can recharge now with the new technologies with super high power, 600 kilowatts of power recharging. So yeah, we keep pushing the technology. Everything is about the technology. That's the whole purpose of Formula E and of everything else we do.
Are you charging it during the pit stop?
Yep.
How long are we talking the pit stop?
30 seconds, 10% of the battery.
Wow, that's
a lot.
So in 5 minutes, you're charging the whole thing.
Yep.
Starting off when you had the idea in 2011, how many people said, Alejandro, come on, everyone wants the combustion engine. What are you thinking about? How many people pushed back on your idea?
In the beginning, there was a lot of people that didn't believe this was possible. Even my friends, because I come from the world of motorsport and I was involved in many different areas in the Formula One world. So I remember when I decided to go for this, I got a call from Bernie Ecclestone, which is a dear, very dear friend and always a business partner in the past and big supporter. And he said, you will never make it to your first race. I think today we're going to have race 150 or something like that. But Bernie said, you will never make it to the first race. All my other friends, like, you know, Flavio Briatore, who was also in Formula One, was making fun of me, doing like the noise of like a discharge, like, zzz, zzz, like. It was tough because people, the problem was people thought we would not last and we would go bust after a few months. And we almost did go bust. So people didn't really want to join us because they said, if we join a project that is gonna go bankrupt, why should we spend money? And second, we're going to be also drug, you know, suffer the same kind of reputational damage or whatever. Everything managed to change when we got big American investors on board, Liberty Global and Discovery. And then people said, oh, these guys are maybe not going bust. Let's join them. Let's invest with them. And we're here today.
Same company that owns Formula One.
Cousin company. Same guy, John Malone, is the chairman of both. Mm-hmm. Liberty Media owns Formula One, Liberty Global owns Formula E. So, you know, we are in the same kind of extended family, if you like, which opens the door in the future for, in my view, more collaboration between Formula One and Formula E. But at the moment, we're staying separate.
What was the biggest challenge early days?
I mean, the biggest challenge was the money. You know, when you, and it may seem a very kind of obvious answer, but it's the real one.
Yeah.
This was a pure startup concept where we had a PowerPoint, we went out, we raised capital, and we ran out of capital. And I remember after three races into Formula E, I owed $25 million to my suppliers, and I had $100,000 in the bank. So that was kind of a challenge. There was a lot of sleepless night. I remember I would wake up every day at 4 a.m., not even 3:59 or 4:01. I would wake up at 4 without the alarm, and I would see invoices. And I would go like, this one I'm going to call and tell them to wait. This one I'm going to not reply. This one I'm going to pay half. So it was kind of really a balancing exercise to kind of survive, went through that period, while we gained time to raise additional funds, which we did in the last second of the last minute of the last day. It was really, 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 we were really close to the wire.
That's an insane amount of stress. Like, how did you keep your mental health healthy?
I don't know if I kept it. If you ask many friends of mine, they would say I definitely lost it at that period. You keep pushing, you know, it's like, it's almost, and again, many people just say it like a kind of obvious thing. It is an obvious thing. Either you keep pushing or you give up. But for some reason, you want to keep pushing, and the next day you try, and you take one day at a time, and you try not to go bust. And the longer you don't go bankrupt, the longer you have hope to find something that will make the business a success.
Yeah. And then Saudi Arabia and Formula E partnered up. You had the first race.
It was in December 18.
December 18.
Early December 18, yes, okay. It was. You know, that was probably the most important moment in the history of Formula E. Definitely for me as an entrepreneur and as a person, also even in my life, it was one of the most important moments because what we experienced when we came to Saudi was really a game changer. And I feel that we've been really privileged to witness and also to play our small role in the incredible change that this country is going through. We've been able to witness, and I've been able to witness personally, the incredible leadership of His Royal Highness, Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who has really, I mean, almost I would say single-handedly, not single-handedly because he has a great team of people around him, but almost single-handedly pushed a transformation of a country and have done a step forward by decades, I would say. So it's really fantastic. So yeah, so we came and we did that, and that shows how the sport can help also change things. And I was talking with Prince Abdulaziz, in Turkey, Minister of Sports, who is a dear friend and has been also in this Mosho. We were talking about the changes that happened, having Formula E as a catalyst for those changes in the kingdom. For example, the visa system. Because of the Formula E race, Prince Abdulaziz managed to agree a system that was online to get visas for the drivers all over the world, for the public. You could buy a ticket, and with that ticket, you will go to a website of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and you will get an online visa.
Done.
Which was the door to the online visa system that Saudi has today that is also that is allowing hundreds of thousands, millions of visitors to come on a much easier way into Saudi. That, for example, was part of the Formula E first year. Or the concerts. You know how many concerts are there? Yesterday we had a beautiful concert. Tonight we have more concerts. But Formula E was the first.
The first one I remember.
First concerts in Saudi were in this time were at the Formula E race.
Was that the race where it rained? Was that the first one or the second?
And then number three, it rained.
It rained. Okay.
I remember I wake up in the morning in Riyadh and I have like 20 missed calls. Already at 6:30 in the morning, I woke up early to go to the track. I'm like, if I have so many missed calls, something is going on. So before I looked at the messages, I opened my curtain and I see this rain falling. And I'm like, okay, I know why the messages are for. Because of course, the track was not prepared for the rain. So it had kind of a kind of downhill area. And that got floating in the bottom. So. I remember us moping and Prince Khaled from the Saudi Motorsport Federation moping with me, with Alberto, with all the guys from Formula E and from the Saudi team. And I have to say, Saudi Minister of Sports, the team did an amazing job at the time. We really worked amazing together. But we had to get the water out. So it was really close not to have the race because of rain in Riyadh. How random is that?
That's so funny. Formula E was the catalyst and the first of many's for Saudi concerts. The first one I remember it was David Guetta.
Yes.
Yes.
It was David Guetta, Black Eyed Peas, and Enrique Iglesias.
Wow.
Those three came. And I remember David Guetta, you know, emotional, seeing what was happening. And also it was, you know, the first time that there was no need for separation between men and women. Everybody was together and it was beautiful. Really, we have been so lucky to be able to participate of that.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw that. I was like, wow, this is real change because we've never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about Extreme E? I know you did a few events of Extreme E in Saudi Arabia and Al-Ula. Is that a subsidiary of Formula E?
Extreme E is separate. And now we are switching Extreme E to Extreme H. So Extreme E would be kind of the rally version of Formula E, but they're separate companies. On Extreme E and now hopefully Extreme H, it's not a seamless transition. We still have a lot of things to do. The whole point is to explore a new technology. In this case, hydrogen. Basically, the whole thing goes back to our philosophy or to my personal philosophy. Everybody talks about sustainability and the environment. But for sustainability and for the environment are two types of actions. Actions that make you feel good and actions that make a difference. Most of the actions are sadly on the first group. Mm. They make us feel good. But they have no impact. You know, these people that say, no, we shouldn't take a plane to go on a holiday. We should take a train or whatever. Do it if it makes you feel good. But it doesn't even register on the total, you know, amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. I mean, so many things. I'm not going to eat meat. Fine, don't. But don't think you're saving the planet. If it makes you feel good, fine. What makes a difference is technology. That is the only way to sort out the climate change problem and the CO2 in the atmosphere and so on and so forth. Mainly two technologies. Nuclear fusion and direct carbon capture. So basically the CO2 that is already in the air, you have to capture it. That's a process that uses huge amounts of energy. So if you produce the energy with fossil fuels, you're making the problem worse. But if you get clean, unlimited energy from nuclear fusion, then you can, let's say, absorb or get back all the CO2 in the atmosphere. But those two are really the two technologies that can make a huge difference. Then there are other technologies that help in different areas. Electric cars. Again, even if we change all the cars in the world to electric, that would not make, it would make a dent, but not massive in the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. But it makes a huge difference in cities.
Yeah.
We live in cities and we breathe smoke.
True.
That's where electric cars make sense. That's, for example, what China, and here I have to say China has shown great leadership. When we did the first Formula E in China, and the first race ever in Formula E was in China in 2014, from my hotel in Beijing, I couldn't see the building in front.
Smog,
like crazy. They had this thing called good air days. And that year, there were 7 good air days.
Seven.
This year, there have been 300 good air days. Why? Because all the cars in Beijing are electric. And the factories also, there were a lot of factories working on coal. They have also dealt with that. So you can make changes. It doesn't really mean we're going to stop global warming. But for sure, we're going to make our cities cleaner. Another technology we want to explore is hydrogen. That's why of extreme H. And we don't know if hydrogen is going to work or not. But at least with the championship, you test it.
Yeah.
That's why we want to, you know, evolve extreme E to extreme H. And hopefully have the first ever race of extreme H in Saudi.
Just on the back to Beijing for a second. Did they ban the combustion engine or did they introduce congestion charges like London?
They did a few number of things. But what they mainly did was to promote heavily the sale of electric cars. So basically, they promote the sale of electric cars. They gave access to electric cars to the city center. They gave subsidies to electric cars.
Ah.
They also promoted a lot electric car companies, local electric car companies. And now the car manufacturers, and we have many car manufacturers here with us, of course, in Formula E. We have, you know, Porsche, Maserati, Nissan, Jaguar, you name it. They are facing strong competition from the Chinese car manufacturers because the Chinese were really the first ones to jump on this together with Elon Musk and Tesla in the US.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. I'm invited today by NEOM McLaren. And when you said cities and cars is what pollute, NEOM is going to be, at least the line is going to be, a city that doesn't have cars. So I can see why an entity like NEOM chose to partner up with a Formula E racing team in McLaren.
Actually, when I was discussing with them, the proposal from McLaren was triple. Formula One, Formula E, and Extreme E. And NEOM said, no, Formula One is not our thing. We love Formula One, but maybe it's more for Aramco or for another, you know, Saudi entity. We're going to go on Formula E and on Extreme E. And that's where they are now.
Do you foresee a day where the standard mode of racing is electric in your lifetime?
You know, everything is going to depend on the evolution of technology. Because what people want to see in racing is the fastest car. If the fastest car is electric, then the main racing will be electric. If the fastest car is combustion, it will be combustion. If it's hydrogen or if it's any other technology. I could even think of a race that mixes all those technologies. But really what people want to see is the fastest machine. So it will be technology that will be dictating that. I have to say, also in looking at sustainability, combustion is going to be very important because what we can do with combustion, we're not going to be able to change all the cars in the world to electric or to hydrogen. There will be for a very long time still combustion cars. But if you can reduce by 60, 70, 80% the pollution from the combustion engine, that will make a huge difference because you have so many combustion cars. And today we can get so much more energy from 1 liter of gasoline with the efficiency of the motors that we used to get before. So I think we're going to need all the energies. I think we're going to need a combination of all the energies to be able to deal with what's coming, which is not only mobility, but all the energy needed for AI. We're going to need every energy, including fossil fuels. So we have to optimize that, batteries, hydrogen, everything.
Jeddah is the fastest circuit on the Formula One calendar. What kind of top speed from the fastest car has Formula E recorded so far?
So I think, I don't have the data from yesterday here, but you know, the Formula E, for example, accelerates now significantly faster than Formula One.
Faster?
In acceleration, yes.
Acceleration.
0 to 100, we are 1.7 seconds.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was going to say it's cheating. It's not cheating. Electric motors have instant torque. And now we have 4-wheel drive electric motors. Formula One is 2-wheel drive. And yeah, the acceleration is just insane. I think top speed here, we must be in 300 kilometers per hour or something.
300. Yeah. It's not too far off F1 cars.
It's not too far off F1. I think the big difference between Formula E cars and Formula One cars is the amount of energy you use with what, let's say the simulation in Monaco, with the energy that a Formula One car uses in one lap, we do a whole race. Therefore, the only way to do that is to be efficient. To be efficient, you cannot have too much aerodynamic charge. Therefore, in corners, you go slower. The Formula One cars have so much downforce that they can go almost full speed on the corners because the wings will keep them on the ground. Formula E cars have no wings, so we go with less resistance. We use less energy, but of course, in corners, we slow down. But this is Gen 3. Our Gen 4 car will be another huge jump in performance. We will be in the performance between Formula 2 and Formula 1. So we will be maybe 3-4 seconds per lap slower than Formula 1. And that's Gen 4. And then Gen 5, we will see.
When are you expecting Gen 4 to
in
go?
In 2 years.
In 2 years' time.
Yeah.
So you're currently running Gen 3.
Yeah. Okay.
Sponsorship strategies. How difficult was it for you to convince traditional companies to invest in electric racing? Especially maybe when the concept was unfamiliar or untrusted.
You know, I would say there were like two groups. There were a lot of companies who were absolutely like not believing in it. I mean, let's say three groups. There were companies that were anti, like some maybe, I don't know, oil companies from the US or, you know, like saying, no way, we don't want to get mixed on this. There were companies that were wait and see, which were the majority. And there were a few companies who said, we want to jump on this, even if it fails. So with some of our really early sponsors came because they really believed they should be part of what we were trying to achieve, even if we didn't achieve it. And that was really fantastic to get. So we got these really early supporters. DHL, the logistics company, they were at the time really pushing on optimizing all the impact of their transportation, of their logistics. Tag Heuer, the watches. I remember they came in and they were really, really keen. And I remember the CMO saying, even if you fail, we want to be part of the failure of this project because we love it. We love the philosophy behind it. Julius Baer, our Swiss bank, was also really early. And then we got ABB, our title partner. They came in also quite early, a bit after those first ones. But they came very early and they became a huge partner, also in terms of technology, in terms of charging. So, you know, it's I would say it's a bit more tricky now because before, 10 years ago, we were the new thing.
Yeah.
And electric cars were the future. Now electric cars are not the future. Electric cars are the present. And in some places are the future. The present is not as big as it was expected. So especially in some geographies. If you look at China, electric cars have exceeded expectations. If you look at Europe, electric cars have not achieved expectations. I think they will. If you look to US, they have exceeded expectations in some states. They have not achieved expectations in some other states. So, you know, when you're the present, you have to work on the present. You have to show your audience numbers. You have to show your engagement. You have to show your social media numbers. You have to show. Before, people were almost joining Formula E for the dream, for the adventure, for the hope.
Now it's a reality.
Now it's a reality. Yeah, now it's a reality. Before it was trying to be a reality. I mean, if I tell you things that we were doing, like to put these races in place, I was going myself. I remember Beijing. I moved for 3 weeks before the first race. I was going myself to the track at night to go and be where they were placing the walls and the fences and holding the ground for the protections and so on. So yeah, and now it's a reality.
Probably easier to have conversations since the proof of concept is there for everyone to see. Easier to have conversations with prospective partners and sponsors today.
It's easier because partners know where you are. Before, they didn't really know what to expect.
Yeah.
Now they can come to races, they can check, they can look at numbers, they can look at what we're doing on TV in the different countries, they can look at all that. We got so hooked to trying to defy this proof of concept concept that we kept inventing new championships. So now Formula E is proven.
Yeah.
Extreme, a bit more proven, but not that much. And now we just invented another one, E1, which is a power electric powerboat races that we had also in Jeddah here a couple of weeks ago. That one, we are again back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
We're again back to trying to convince the people of something they have never seen. We don't know what numbers we have. We don't know what's going on with social media, all the other things. We learn as we go. But it's really kind of a very exciting period of a project, the beginning. For me, I prefer much more the start of the project than the normal life. When a project is kind of established and solid, you're in...
It's boring.
It's a little bit boring. It's a paradox because it's actually what you want to, where you want to get. You know, you start a company and you don't sleep at night and you're going to go bankrupt. Suddenly you're safe and you're like, okay, now I want to go back to the sleepless nights.
Humans need challenges. Keeps us alive.
Yeah. I agree. I guess some more than others. Some have this kind of facility to find new challenges all the time. But I think you need challenges and you need also the happiness you get when you overcome the challenge.
Well, you remember what Steve Jobs said, and I think it's very applicable to you. The people who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are often the ones who do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if anything from Steve Jobs is applicable to me. You know, it's completely different dimensions. But you, like I said, you have to try. I mean, when we started this Formula E thing, we discussed before, nobody believed. We believed and we're here. And of course, the change we make is small. But like I was saying, technology, small changes can count a lot. I gave one time I gave some example that, you know, this thing called the butterfly effect?
Of course.
So if you travel to the past,
make a decision.
You cannot touch anything because if you touch a tiny thing in the past, like the example is you kill a butterfly, that could change completely the future.
Yeah.
I many times sometimes said, who knows if we are in a butterfly effect right now? Mm. Creating the changes, the little changes that could have huge consequences for the future. And who knows? So we keep doing stuff. You don't know if it's going to change the future or not, but you know, definitely we try.
Year on year growth numbers in attendees. How does that look? How is it grafted?
In attendees, it's grown a lot. It has grown a lot. And also, I mean, you know, it was great to see a lot of people, a big crowd in Jeddah yesterday. Okay. Because in Riyadh already we had our crowd. And it's fantastic when you raise so many years in the same city because I've been seeing, for example, these kids, these families, because Formula E is very family friendly. There is less noise. The sound, I call it sound, noise, word, but we're very open. The pit lane is open for the kids. And I've been seeing these kids, many are the children of friends of mine in Saudi or, you know, people I don't know, but I've been seeing these faces of these kids every race. And you can see these kids already know the drivers, know the teams. They have the real fans of Formula E. We're growing our own fan base, and that's very important.
Mm.
And that happens in some places and it doesn't in others. For example, in Mexico. It's crazy. We've been racing there 10 years since the beginning. We have our huge fan base in Mexico. People always feel the race. And it happens in many, many other places. But we're going to do a race in Miami. I was talking to my team. And we're really struggling. Not only us. NASCAR is racing just before us. They're struggling to sell tickets. We're struggling to sell tickets. I hope we will sell many tickets. We still have a couple of months. But, you know, it's very interesting when you race all around the world. And you have the chance to experience the world. In 1 year, you basically experience the world. We race from Mexico to Jeddah to Tokyo to London. In 1 year, you go and you see how the world and all the cities are changing. Tokyo, sold out. Sold out. We've been only racing for 2 years there. Well, it's going to be the second year. First year, the tickets went in 1 hour. Boom. And now we're almost sold out. We have two races instead of one because we had so much demand. One first race sold out and we have another few thousand tickets to sell for the second race. So in general, numbers have exploded, but with some challenges here and there.
It's interesting how some markets can quickly adapt to the interest, Tokyo, for example, and some markets are a bit tricky. How many races on the calendar this year?
So we have, I think it's 17 races, 15 or 17 races, 10 venues, because we do two races in many places, okay. Like here. Some places we do one race, so 17 races and 10 venues. And we keep expanding, but you know, it's We have to see. I mean, I have a few ideas on how to shape the calendar for the future, but I think for now, it's a good number.
Does the traveling get too much for you? Do you ever feel like burnout?
No, because I mean, I love traveling, but if you think about it, of course, I miss my family a lot because they're the ones that kind of have to cope with me and my traveling. But I have Formula E. I have E1, which is 7 races or 8 this year. I have Extreme. And then you have all the meetings in between to prepare those races. No? So it's basically constant traveling. But, you know, it's who could complain of that? They're, you know, I'm not working in the bottom of a mine in a mountain in Chile. Like I sent my son to do an internship last summer. I'm traveling the world, you know, which is a great thing to do.
Best job in the world?
Probably. I got one of the best jobs in the world.
Does it feel like a job?
No, not at all. That's why it's a good job. The good jobs don't feel like a job.
Yeah. Any mentors, any people that you looked up to in your life?
Many people I looked up in my life, of course. I would say probably Flavio Briatore, John Todd, and Bernie Ecclestone were the main ones in my racing career. I would say on my political career, because I was a politician before I went into racing, it would have been José María Aznar, which is my father-in-law now. That's why I stopped politics. I married the daughter of my boss, so I changed profession. Wilfred Martens, who was a former prime minister of Belgium, that was the president of the EPP when I was secretary general. So that was also a very... Silvio Berlusconi was a very important figure in my political career. And that was already many years ago. And then, of course, now... we don't have to go very far. I look up as one of the most, or the most, or one of the most intelligent persons I've ever met is the Crown Prince here in Saudi, Mohammed bin Salman.
Amazing. We will end with IWC rapid-fire questions, 60 seconds. Answer as quickly as you can, one word or two or three. Favorite racetrack in the world?
Monaco.
What's your daily car?
Range Rover.
Most exciting Extreme E location?
Neom.
Formula E or Extreme E, if you had to pick one?
Formula E.
One innovation in motorsport you'd like to see in the next 5 years?
Hydrogen.
Jeddah or Riyadh?
Oh. Pass.
A word to Bernie Ecclestone today.
A word to define.
What would you say to Bernie Ecclestone today, who told you once upon a time that it won't work out? You'll never have your first race.
I made it.
And finally, Saudi Arabia in one word.
Future.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed this. Good luck today. Good luck in your journey. It's amazing to see, honestly, congrats on your 10 years now, 11 years. It's amazing to see how with an idea, against all the odds, people who have been in this business for many, many years who said you'll never have your first race, and today you're in your 11th year of existence with no signs of slowing down. I tip my hat off for you and wishing you all the best of luck today's race and onwards.
Thank you. You wish me luck, and I tell you something. Seeing where we are now, luck plays also a very important role in life.
It does.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, sir. Thank you.